Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science in a good way, as we get an expert to answer science's most interesting questions as decided by us. But today, that is not what we're doing, Brooksy.
No, we are not. We are breaking with the format.
Yep, we've decided to do a World Cup series where we're pitting the world's best scientists, very much as decided by us, against one another. But then there is this weird nod to boxing thrown into the mix. Anyway, this is the second episode in the series, so if you've not heard part one, go back and have a listen.
What's our lineup for this week again?
Well, we had some heavy hitters last episode, and this week we've got Richard Dawkins against Lynn Margulis, JBS Haldane against Archimedes, Charles Darwin against 2UU, and Dorothy Hodgkin versus Vera Rubin.
That's just an amazing lineup, isn't it?
I think a lot of people will be thinking, well, I know half of them.
Yeah. But what they'll be thinking is, the people I know are surely the ones that are going through. And I don't think that's what's going to happen.
I don't think so. Round five. In the red corner, we've got Richard Dawkins. In the blue corner, we've got Lynn Margulis. So, yes, old Dawkins.
Yeah, obviously.
Young Dawkins. Young Dawkins.
Yeah.
Don't think about... online Dawkins. Don't think about social media Dawkins. Don't think about pundit Dawkins.
Yeah.
Think about some exceptional books that he wrote.
Yeah.
Including The Selfish Gene. Now, this is kind of what I mean by not being that impressed by the kind of, you know, coming up with structures of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas what Dawkins did is, you know, come up with such a powerful explanation of the nature of evolution and this idea of the selfish gene that is hugely significant and hugely influential. And I think it's a shame that people sort of forget that now because of the sort of vibe that the guy has.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, so the other interesting thing about him is, because people often say, oh, Richard Dawkins, you know, what did he publish? What papers was he publishing? You know, because people say, oh, you know, he wrote a book. Yeah, but what papers? But the book was like laid out this proper revolutionary idea that still, like, I think still reigns supreme in biology now.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, it doesn't matter that it wasn't published as, you know, I'm sure he did publish papers, but the fact that he was able to communicate this in a book that biologists just like all said, oh, okay, wow, brilliant. That whole idea behind the selfish gene or I think he'd have preferred it to be called the immortal gene in that you know, it wasn't conscious or anything.
Yeah,
The way it works, it looks selfish, effectively, about reproducing itself, creating bodies around itself that will then carry it into the next generation.
He said this great thing, didn't he, about, I can't think of the quote. It's to do with sort of individuals and groups and species, they're just these kind of vehicles for genes. And he said it's like rowing boats are vehicles for the talents of rowers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and like, you're not looking at the boat and thinking of the boat's the important thing here.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's really hard for us to imagine that, like, something so sort of effectively small in scale, like our genes,
is governing everything.
And
the driver of
But it literally makes evolution make sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I think previously, you know, if you look at Darwin's work on natural selection and evolution, there was no consideration of genes because we didn't know what genes were. And you would look at it and think, well, the reason that this is happening or this behavior is occurring is that the individual is trying to sort of promote itself, continue itself. And what Dawkins said is, no, it's all about the genes.
Yeah.
Which is a really radical idea.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I've got a radical idea, though. Lynn Margulis, basically, she said that in a field of biology where everything was about competition and everybody thought the whole of biology was about one thing competing against another.
Yeah, this is an interesting matchup, actually, because they're both sort of evolutionary biologists. Yeah,
again, I think this is a bit like Fermi and Einstein in that actually they're both great, really big conceptual things. So she basically said evolutionary success could arise through things cooperating. So this idea that's become known as symbiosis. Mm-hmm. So you get two different kinds of organisms and they work together to cooperate with each other. And that is basically the structure of cellular biology now. Is like, you know, what we've got as the basis of biology and how cells work is the idea of symbiosis of ancient organisms working together.
Yeah, because there's this sort of idea that mitochondria, like the little sort of energy cells.
Yeah.
Cells is an unfortunate word to use there. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Energy providing thing in your cells was originally its own organism and it's sort of combined with another cell.
Yeah.
To work together and cooperate.
Yeah.
Which is really like mad to think.
It's sort of like, I think it was bacteria. So the idea is that, you know, you've just got a bacterium that becomes sort of enslaved within the cell.
Yeah.
But actually it's good for the bacterium. It's good for the other stuff in the cell.
And well, actually we get along pretty well.
I'm talking like a physicist now, I know.
Yeah. But, yeah.
But you know, it was a big idea. And everyone at the time said, no, that can't possibly be happening because that's not how biology works.
Because it's competition.
Yeah. She got the paper rejected like 15 times or something. Eventually got it published somewhere. Eventually she sort of like was like, oh God, you know, I'm going to have to write a book about this to explain this to these idiots. and she did. So she wrote this book. You know, the first publisher refused to publish it. And then I think Yale Press published it. And then she couldn't get grants because people were just like, you know, we're not giving you money. Because you've bypassed the proper process,
the system,
getting ideas out there. So by writing a book, so it's amazing that Dawkins can write a book and everyone's like, oh God, this is brilliant. Mm. She writes a book and everyone's like, you're fucking cheating.
That's not how you do it.
Yeah. So she went about 15 years without getting any money from the National Science Foundation because none of her peers would like endorse her. So, but eventually she was proved right. And now it's like biological, like, absolute sort of gospel that this is what happened.
Yeah. I mean, they've both made similarly big contributions to the sort of field of evolutionary biology, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate that they're drawn against each other in a sense.
I think this might be our first coin toss, you know.
Do you think so?
I think it might be. I mean, who's your...
See, my gut feeling... It's sort of for Dawkins, which feels, because it just feels slightly like he's got an edge that's slightly more fundamental, like the gene, the drive for the gene.
Yes, and the gene is the primary unit of selection. That's punchy.
It is punchy, and Margulis has come in with this is how cells work, and she does change the way we think about how biology can evolve.
Yeah.
And you get symbiosis. And actually...
It's so important, though, cooperation.
It's so important, and it explains so much in nature. And like, the way that fungi work, and, you know, the way that lichens are these cooperative units with algae and
you could win me over with a bit of stuff about slime mold here.
Yeah, I could. Exactly. So
I think we're gonna have to toss a coin.
I hate this.
I can't...
Yeah.
I can't reasonably separate them.
No, that's fair enough. All right. Should we say heads, Margulis goes through?
Yeah.
It's a head.
The results are in.
by the skin of her teeth in the blue corner. The winner is Lynn Margulis.
Oh!
I feel pleased
by
that.
Yeah, that's a big result.
Yeah, I like that because I haven't had to put Dawkins out.
No.
It's just he missed the penalty.
It's also, it's nice to have a shock.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shock result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Because people, again, people will absolutely have heard of Dawkins and thought, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's out.
And Margulis, I think, should have got a Nobel Prize. She's dead now. Can't have one.
I guess this is better than a Nobel Prize? Going through to the
I think Lynn would feel so.
Not even the semis, the quarters. Round six. In the red corner, we've got JBS Haldane. In the blue corner, we've got Archimedes. No one wanted to get Archimedes. Archimedes is Man City in this. Archimedes is Man City.
The draw really upsets me. Because Haldane is one of the scientific heroes of the 20th century, right? Mm-hmm. And actually not a household name, really. People don't know him very much. And so the amazing thing about him, I'll argue for him, but it feels like Sheffield Wednesday against Man City already.
Yeah.
But let me just say, so didn't get a degree, mm-hmm. like no scientific degree at all, no scientific pedigree. But he basically did science with his dad, sort of did stuff with, you know, his dad was a biologist, I think, and worked for the government and sort of learnt on the job, did some stuff with him. But he did amazing science in the war, testing things for the Navy about submarines, about diving, about the effects of diving on the human body. Mm-hmm.
Hydrostatic stuff.
But he did it all on himself. So he didn't use other people for the experiments. He just basically, I think he actually quite enjoyed the danger of the whole thing. Because there's a great quote from him where he said, because he fought in the First World War, said he really enjoyed it. Which isn't a thing you hear very often.
Nutter.
Well, not really. Because he said that the great thing about it was that as long as you understood that human behavior and the way human mind works, you can actually sort of have quite a lot of fun. And he did this thing where he was like, the Germans will never believe that I'm going to climb out of the trench and run along the top of it. They'll be so surprised. By the time I've dropped that back down again, they won't have reached for their guns. And so he did it. Just like,
it's ballsy.
He was great. But he did a lot of these sort of diving and compression experiments and injured himself quite a lot. Like really screwed his spine, I think, in some decompression things. Blew out his eardrums.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, contributed enormously important stuff to the war effort on his own. And also he could blow smoke out of his ears. So as party tricks go, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But he sort of wrote a lot of, you know, that's kind of like the showboaty stuff, right?
Yeah.
But he actually did a lot of work on the mathematical sort of side of biology, like of Darwinian selection.
Yeah.
And sort of worked with Ronald Fisher, who was like the father of, not quite the father of statistics, but big, important statistician. Mm-hmm. And they worked, you know, quite closely together. So he made significant contributions to mathematical biology, as well as, you know, being this incredible practical scientist who put his own life on the line to do science for the war effort. That's my argument for Haldane.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got...
I've got Archimedes.
You've got Archimedes.
I don't know, where do you want to start, really? Well, he invented mechanics and hydrostatics.
1-0.
He discovered the law of levers. He was the
pulleys and all that. Yeah.
He was probably the first sort of mathematical physicist. So he applied his advanced maths to the physical world.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's 4-0 with 8 minutes gone.
He discovered the center of gravity.
Yeah. I mean, we did say at the start there's a lot of open goals.
Yeah. And he's taken all of them. Because, there's a few people around.
Yeah.
But he's still absolutely smashing it.
Yeah.
He calculated.
And we've all heard of him as well.
Massively. I mean, our podcast is named after the guy. he calculated pi to the most precise value at the time. Calculated the volume and surface area of a sphere. mathematically. He did loads of great maths with like exponentials and exponents.
And he did practical stuff, didn't he? Like the, you know, the thing where he's like Eureka. It's like,
yeah,
like the,
yeah, yeah.
The
displacement.
Crown, the displacement, understanding, floating.
He
I feel like you're without, you don't need to say
no,
anymore.
No, I don't think I do.
No.
It's Archimedes.
Haldane's out.
Yeah.
The results are in. It's a landslide in the blue corner. It's the one name wonder, Archimedes.
I mean, I think he did well to get through to the last 16.
Very well. And he'll get, I think you get more money, you know, for TV rights and stuff, don't
yeah,
you?
So, yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
it'll
be fine. It's fine, but Archimedes is hammered in. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back after this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And it's round seven. In the red corner, we've got Charles Darwin. In the blue corner, we've got 2UU.
I'm predicting a rout.
I think it's going to be. I'm going to do Darwin here. I've had a couple of crackers. So Darwin, what's quite nice. I mean, everyone knows what Darwin did. What's quite nice is that Darwin was sort of doing it on the side. So he wasn't on that ship to sort of, you know, be a naturalist and come up with. Obviously, no one said to him, you come up with a theory of. He's just done that. He's effectively supposed to be just sort of like surveying the coastlines.
Yeah,
and kind of chart its harbour so they can make better maps.
Yeah.
And while he's going about it, he comes up with the, well, natural selection and the theory of evolution. And it is spicy because certainly religious people do not like it.
Yeah, yeah.
He
was sort of religious himself. He was like, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was. But he was so, but again, it's that kind of conviction in your own work.
Yeah.
Because people at this time would have been thinking that the earth was 6,000 years old. And he's basically saying, probably not actually, lads.
Yeah. That's right. Because his wife was really, I think, really religious. And he didn't want to offend her, but was just like, you know, this is.
It took him a long time to publish.
Yeah. I don't know enough about Darwin, probably not as much as I should, because I sort of always assumed he's just brilliant. Obviously, you know the basics.
Yeah.
And loads of people have written stuff about him and studied him, and it's sort of like, you know, everything's out there if I ever wanted to read it.
Yeah.
But everything I get or understand about him was, A, his work was brilliant, B, he was really humble and actually just a really good guy, and sort of didn't really have any enemies apart from religious people who didn't like the conclusions that he drew.
What he was saying. But that's part of the reason. So he got back from his trip, got back to England in 1836, didn't publish On the Origin of Species until 1859.
Oh.
Which sort of tells you he was like, ooh, but I've got to do it because I think I'm onto something here.
But he was careful about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the great scientific contributions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's possibly the great, and we'll get there, I guess, see how he progresses.
Yeah.
But okay. So I've got two UU who won a Nobel Prize relatively recently.
Mm-hmm.
And she won it for studying traditional Chinese medicine. So, I mean, she's Chinese. She works in China.
Yeah.
China Academy of Traditional Chinese Medicine, which you sort of think of, oh, God, that's just going to be bullshit and bollocks. Mm. But actually, you know, what she
Tiger
did...
Tiger bollocks, probably. Yeah.
What she did was sort of work out the bits of it that actually have something and are onto something. And in the end, she found that... she could extract from sweet wormwood, which is a Chinese medicine,
yeah,
one of their substances. She extracted a substance called artemisinin, which basically stops malaria. So it inhibits the malaria parasite. So she then, you know, was able to make drugs based on this. So she took, you know, folk medicine effectively,
yeah,
and turned it into scientific medicine. And, you know, in terms of impact, saved a lot more lives than Charles Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
Saved millions of lives,
mm,
and won a Nobel Prize for it. So, you know, it's internationally recognized as being brilliant science. And all I can say is she's not Charles Darwin.
Yeah, she didn't come up with natural selection, did she?
She didn't.
I think Darwin's
it's
through.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because some people just do a really good thing in science,
mm,
and some people do something that blows our concept out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah, because I suppose actually that's quite a good way of looking at it, is what 2UU has done is fantastic, has a massive real-world impact, but it doesn't sort of shake the foundations of science that someone has sort of come up with a new drug, effectively.
Yeah,
no matter what the origin is.
Yeah.
Someone coming out and going, everything you think you understand about why the planet looks the way it does is wrong, and I'm going to tell you how.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's likely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, there's no contest. I'm sorry, but there isn't.
It's another landslide win in the red corner. Charles Darwin.
Congratulations, Charles.
He's through. We've got our last game of the first 16.
Our final round has Dorothy Hodgkin in the blue corner, Vera Rubin in the red corner.
This is a nice final matchup because I'm betting that most people haven't heard of either.
Yeah, I think that's true. And also what we've got here is an example of what we were just talking about, which is people making a really significant but actually fairly single contribution to science. And both of these are in that ballpark.
I think Vera's is bigger.
Do you?
I do. Do you want to do Dorothy?
Yeah, so it's quite simple, quite straightforward. Dorothy Hodgkin basically was a crystallographer. So she studied how to put radiation into a crystal, and then you effectively look at the way the crystal affects the radiation, and mm-hmm, it gives you an image of what's inside the crystal. So this is X-ray diffraction.
Yeah.
And she used that to kind of take photographs of proteins. So she was the first scientist to find the structure of a protein. So we're back at sort of in Francis Crick territory in a way. She's using a technique to give us an insight into something that we wouldn't be able to see by any other means. And she then used it to kind of take on penicillin, vitamin B12, and insulin. So she sort of defined the chemical structures of all of these substances, which enabled us to do, you know, better chemistry and to improve healthcare. And that's kind of all I've got in her favour in some ways.
No, I mean, it's good.
She's the first and only British woman to win a Nobel Prize for chemistry, right? So, you know, it's significant enough to win a Nobel Prize.
It's fantastic. But let me ask you this. What is arguably the biggest mystery in modern science on a big scale?
It's dark matter, isn't it?
It's the missing
matter in the universe.
And when did we first become aware of that?
Well, I mean, you can trace it back to the 1930s with Fritz Zwicky sort of saying something's not right about the way galaxies are moving.
Yeah, okay.
But he didn't pin it down very exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I absolutely concede that in 1970, Vera Rubin pinned it down.
Nailed it. So Vera Rubin has just been with a guy called Kent Ford, another astronomer. They were just looking at orbital speeds in spiral galaxies. And they saw that something odd was going on, which was that the stars, a long way from the centers of galaxies, where it's quite sparsely populated,
yeah,
were moving just as fast as those close in.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be happening.
No.
Because the mass of the galaxy that we can see doesn't have enough gravity to hold those stars.
Yeah, they should
in.
Just be spinning
they
off.
They should just be spinning
yeah.
off.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not. So therefore, there had to be a load of unseen matter. And she then sat down and did the calculations.
So she worked out, didn't she, that the gravity of that unseen matter would be what was holding all that stuff in place.
Yeah, and it was 10 times as much as the mass that we could see. So essentially, she's saying 90% of the mass in galaxies and therefore in the observable universe is invisible and unidentified.
And we still haven't identified it. And we looked every fucking where for it.
And we're really looking.
Yeah.
And we do not know what's going on. And it was her that identified that and put a figure on it. And the figure is, I find it absolutely extraordinary. And everyone does.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
90% of the universe, we don't know where it is. We don't know what it looks like. We don't know what it is.
Yeah,
we just know it's there.
All right.
And it's all thanks to her.
Yeah. And I met her, actually.
And?
I went and interviewed her for the first book, 13 Things That Don't Make Sense. She was lovely.
Oh, well, come on then.
She was so nice. And I walked into her office and sort of knocked on the door and she said, "Oh, Michael, I was just cleaning up for you." And she was just like wiping surfaces down and stuff. I was like, "This is Vera Rubin. You've got to be kidding me." I know.
Yeah, you're going to have to concede.
Dorothy Hodgkin, she has her Nobel Prize at least. Vera Rubin didn't get one.
Well, there you go.
But she goes through, doesn't she?
Such a big contribution.
Yeah, yeah, she goes through.
And the fact that it was, what are we talking, 50 years ago? Over 50 years ago? And we're still none the wiser.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's Fermat's Last Theorem good.
It is.
I'm a sucker for that stuff.
Yeah.
Someone just throws something out. And then people
all right,
are like,
all right. She's through to the next round.
There we have it. The last person who's made it into the quarterfinals. The one, the only, Vera Rubin.
Okay, so that is the round of 16 completed. Some shocks in there. The lineup for the quarterfinals is as follows. Isaac Newton against Henrietta Leavitt. Well, I mean, I'm not a betting man, but this next one is a disgrace, and I think that we've fucked the draw somehow. Marie Curie against Albert Einstein. How is that a quarterfinal? That's Argentina-Brazil in a quarterfinal.
Oh, it's amazing.
That is madness.
There's only one winner. Doesn't matter who plays who.
Yeah, okay. Lynn Margulis after that, I mean, heartbreaking coin toss for Richard Dawkins. We'll be taking on Archimedes, and maybe Dawkins is now thinking, well, I wasn't
going very far anyway. Glad to get home early.
And the final quarterfinal, Charles Darwin against Vera Rubin.
Oh, I think there's some obvious results there.
I think there are. I think there's going to be some battles.
Yeah.
But you're in the last eight. yeah, of the world's greatest scientist.
Yeah, you've done well.
So, you know, of course it's going to be tough. So next week, the quarterfinals of the World Cup of Science. I'm tingling with anticipation.
I can't wait.
Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. Does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys. So if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.